from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and I've always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Women Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even a few men, to discover the secrets to their success and share them with you. I'm not a doctor, most of my guests won't be either, so we can't offer medical advice. It's always best to work with your doctor because they know you and have access to the bigger picture. This week's extraordinary woman is Jessica Shotwell-Walker. Jessica is a housewife and mother of two from Atlanta. She empowered herself by starting the ketogenic way of eating over 10 years ago and has since recovered from type 2 diabetes, PCOS and debilitating plantar fasciitis. Jessica has continued to maintain her 65-pound weight loss and no longer takes diabetes medications. In her 50th year, she is the energetic athlete she always wanted to be. Jessica loves tennis almost as much as dragon boat racing and plays in two leagues. She continues to be an inspirational role model in her community of Peachtree City, Georgia, and was named Rotarian of the Year 2016-17 for her outstanding work with her dragon boat teams, where she coaches people from all walks of life, her favourite being the complete beginners. Welcome, Jessica Shotwell-Walker, to the Keto Women Podcast. It's really good to have you here. Hi.
Hello, Daisy. It's so nice to have you have me here. I'm really looking forward to speaking with you today. This is going to be lots of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. So why don't you tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
I am a 50-year-old stay-at-home mom. I'm just trying to live a lifestyle where I'm influencing other people in a positive way, trying to do good work in the world, and finding health that was lost to me for a very long time, but I've regained it now.
So why don't you tell me a bit more about what keto looks like for you? What's your daily keto?
So my daily keto is probably one or two meals a day. And it's very much based around protein because I still feel like I have plenty of body fat to use. So I decided that what worked best for me was to focus on the level of protein that I needed to keep my body lean mass going. And I work out a lot. I play a lot of sports. I'm moving around a lot. And so I need that repair and replacement of my muscles and my bones, plus the fact that I'm getting older. Our whole bodies are made of protein. And because I still have plenty of fat stores, I decided that I was getting better results by not adding fat to my plate over and above what I needed to keep my results. So my day looks a lot more protein heavy, but I still have fat on my body that gets used in the equation. We just don't see it necessarily, but you also see it by me not getting bigger. So yeah.
And you've played around a bit with levels, and we were discussing a bit earlier, but perhaps you could talk a bit about when you started keto and how you found it.
Yes, so I got exposed to what is now called ketogenic dieting back in the 1970s when my father decided that he was going to go on the Atkins program from 1972. So I was a kid then, but I was very much exposed to that. He had blood sugar issues, hypoglycemia, all these kinds of things. I don't know that he was ever diagnosed as a full-blown diabetic like I was later on, but it was in the home. So, my mom knew, hey, Dad's back on Atkins, so we all got chicken and broccoli. But that kind of a thing. So it was in my environment for a really long time. And then when I started going on the road, working as a software consultant, implementing business systems and spending long hours behind a desk or on an airplane or eating in hotel restaurants kind of thing, I decided I wanted to get off the road and have a family. And I was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome at age 18. So I always knew that there was a problem there, was going to have a family. I didn't want to wait too long. But then as the years went by, there was a lot of research going on about, well, what is causing PCOS and what's happening there? And it was very early days on that research. And I was living in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at the time. And they're tying it more and more to insulin resistance and blood sugar problems. And I'm like, ah, I know about that.
Yeah. Right?
My dad lived through that. So, okay, what did he do? And he, you know, so I decided I was going to go back on Atkins. And in order for me to try to get pregnant with my son, they weren't giving medicine at the time, even though it was very much cutting edge kind of a thing. So I went, put myself on ultra low carb diet. And then my doctor at the time gave me Clomid, which is a follicle stimulating medicine. And I had to go through 5 rounds. You only get 6. So five rounds it took.
Right.
Yeah. And finally I fell pregnant with my son.
You only get 6 because that's.
Because it overstimulates your ovaries, you know, and it, yeah.
Right. So it's for a health reason. You can't go past doing it.
They don't
it
like
six
to go
times.
Past 6 times. Yeah.
So I see.
Then
right.
You have to move to the next stage of fertility treatments. So luckily right. I didn't have to do that. I think that the going on the ultra low carb did that for me. It gave me that break. So I had a beautiful, healthy son, although he was over 9 pounds as my first baby.
Wow.
Again, that points to blood sugar issues, right? Because people with that, they tend to have larger babies. So yeah, that was me. And so let's see what else. I put on the weight, you know, I was 200 pounds at 5'3" when he was born. And, you know, but he was healthy and beautiful. I, you know, breastfed him for 2 years, 2.5 years, and then I fell pregnant, decided to get pregnant again with my daughter. By that time, the research had moved on, and my doctor at the time said, yes, you can go on metformin. So I went on the metformin, fell pregnant almost immediately.
Really?
Yes.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
So that it really does help with PCOS and metformin.
It did with me, yes. And I hear a lot of other people, too, that helps. You know, they say, oh, there's digestive issues and whatever. I said, well, that's my barometer that I ate too many carbs.
Yeah.
Right? If my stomach starts getting upset, time to back off. And then by that time, just kept backing off. And, you know, with the going on the ultra low carb with my son, you know, Atkins says that you go up through this ladder of progression to add carbohydrates back into your level. Mm-hmm. Well, my level was never leaving induction.
No.
I was not getting results. So going through that was called Atkins induction. But the way I was eating and what I was doing is basically today is what's called ketogenic.
Yeah.
So I was doing it way back then. It was just called something different. It was called Atkins induction. So
absolutely. Yeah. And you were doing it solo, really. You didn't have
no support
community that you have now. Yeah.
No, I made every mistake in the book. I went down every rabbit hole. I got, you know, deathly sick with the metformin. You know, I figured that out. And, you know, it was just a matter of self-experimentation and trying things and how do you feel and all that kind of did it all. And here I still am.
Why did you get, when you said you got sick with the metformin, what was that? Was that a case of
Well, they get it gets
low,
a little or? GI distress.
Ah, okay.
So yeah. So you're running to the bathroom all the time, especially in the first couple of weeks as your body gets used to it, the dosage. But by the time I decided to, after my daughter was born and I was still really heavy, we ended up moving from outside Philadelphia in New Jersey to Atlanta, Georgia. For my husband, he needed to be near a more convenient airport because we have a consulting business. And so we moved down here and I had to go change my driver's license to the new state. And I had to write on there 170 pounds. And I was so sad about that. And of course, what did I do? I went home and I ate myself another 15 pounds heavier in a month because of course that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And so Thanksgiving, which here in the United States is the third Thursday in November. It's usually a big time for people to get together, big family, lots of food, you know, it's a big indulgence and everybody's like, I'm going off my diet for Thanksgiving because it's just what you do. and I couldn't even button my pants before Thanksgiving arrived because I indulged myself. I said, that's it. Finally finishing up with this. And that's when I decided going back on Atkins, doing this kind of thing. And over the course of 18 months, I dropped 65 pounds. And that was over 10 years ago, and I've kept it off ever since.
Brilliant.
Never leaving Atkins induction, which is now called keto.
So, yeah. what's the difference that time around that led to you keeping it off, do you think? Because you said before that you lost weight and you went with the Atkins induction and you did really well, but it, for one reason or another, it came back up. What was different?
Well, first was I had another child, and then I was just, comfortable raising kids and just focusing on them. I was home alone. My husband traveled 4 days out of seven. So I was pretty much home by myself with two young children and just focusing on them. And believe me, they're pediatricians. There's like, these are the best fed children. There was a beautiful book called Super Baby Food by Ruth Yudkin. And she had these things in there, like how to meet, when your baby's starting to wean and what to prepare for them. And, they would have an egg yolk every day, or, in the other days they would have yogurt, full fat yogurt, all these kinds of things. They were basically ovo-lacto, eating a vegetarian, but they had any meat that they wanted. I didn't restrict them from meats. It was just, this book said, hey, here's a way to do it. And I made all their food. Mm-hmm. My children did not get anything out of jars. Not because I was snotty about it or anything. It's just that, hey, I had lots of time on my hands. I'm home alone with these kids and we're going to do, apply myself to excellence in this particular fashion. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking for ways to be great, and so raising my kids and feeding them well and making sure that everybody was happy. Awesome. I didn't focus on me because, all right, whatever. Kids were more important at the time. But then when we moved here to Georgia, they started going to school, Montessori school. I would drop them to school. And then that's when I would go up to the local walking track and just walk.
Right.
And I walked and walked and walked. And then I started saying, I can actually jog a little bit. So I would walk a lap and jog a lap. And then, eventually I was just, and it wasn't because anybody was, cracking the whip on me or whatever else. It was more like my body said, hey, I'm ready for this. I'm ready to try this. And it worked out. And then of course, winter came and I took my bad self indoors and went to jazzercise and made lots of friends there, jazzercise. And I always, was always choosing things that was mostly women. Because, my husband was away a lot and he was, would come home and, be like, what have you been doing all week? All this kind of thing. And I just like, I don't need the hassle. So, that became a very controlling and scary thing at times. So I just always made sure that whatever I was doing was like unimpeachable. And it was a way for the way I was eating, the way I was moving, who I was choosing to be around was a way of keeping control in my life, despite things that were feeling out of control around like emotional things and my relationship. So, yeah.
So that became your safe place and safe environment with people who made you feel safe.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So, and then to add on to that, I got invited to join our local Rotary Club, which is a service organization that's around the world. We have over a million members around the world. And the wonderful thing about being a Rotarian is that no matter where you go in the world, you can attend a Rotary Club meeting. And they have breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings all over the place. You just look them up online and do a makeup. Because if you're missing your own meeting, you're on vacation, you're missing your home meeting, you go to a makeup. And you walk in the door, you say, hey, I'm a Rotarian from District 6900, Rotary Club of Peachtree City. Here's our little banner. We trade banners. And you have an instant family. Instant family.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, you can do it absolutely anywhere.
Everywhere in the world. If you're a Rotarian, you have an instant family. You walk in there and these are people who are decision makers and leaders in their communities.
Yeah, tell me more about that. Tell me more about the ethos of that as a group. They're all about service, right?
And helping the motto for Rotary is service above self, which totally fit in with what I love to do. I love to be out in the community. I love helping people become their best because it's just more fun that way, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
for sure. People with a smile on their face and they're achieving things they never thought they could do. And probably wouldn't be able to do on their own, but because you have a group of like-minded people, now we're making things happen. Yeah. And the Rotary Club does amazing work around the world. You may have heard of our efforts with the polio vaccinations. That's all Rotary driven.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And they have things with literacy and clean water and women and child health, all kinds of stuff going on. So I love it. I love being part of that organization. Yeah.
It sounds like it's a really good fit with you and your personality.
Right. So because I became more and more active in the Rotary Club, the first year that I joined was the second year that they were running dragon boat festivals at our Rotary
Club. I was
going to
say, when did the dragon boats come in? Because that's how I know you as Dragon Boat Lady.
Yes. That has become a central feature for me because it does. It ties in everything that I'm about. There's so much more to that sport than just physical activity. So I got involved with that because there were some very forward-thinking people in my club who said, hey, we are a working club. We roll up our sleeves and we do work. We don't just write checks and pay for things. We do the work. And our central project was starting to become just committee driven. It got so efficient that we could just do it through committee and then it was done and the membership didn't have to get involved as much. So these leaders in the club said, nope, that's not what we're about. We want to find something that everybody can work on. And of course, anybody who's ever put on a big festival knows that every single person needs to volunteer, plus their spouses and their friends and their children, just to pull this off. Which was
a lot of work.
Perfect for what we wanted to do. So we were renting boats from the Lake Lanier Canoe and Kayak Club, which was the Olympic facility when Atlanta had the Olympics. That was the facility where they did all the canoe and kayak and all those flat water races. So that is still there and it's being used every day. And we rented 20 person dragon boats from them every year for about 3 or 4 years until our Rotary Club decided to buy their own boats.
So tell us quickly exactly what dragon boat racing is.
So dragon boat, it's the most amazing thing. So you can have, generally around the world, you can have a 20 person boat or a 10 person boat. And that just tells you how many benches are in there. So my boats here that I use, we use 10-person boats because it's just easier for people to put teams together. So there's 5 benches, 2 persons per bench. And so you have someone sitting on the right and someone sitting on the left all the way down the boat, it's shaped like a big canoe. And in the back, you have somebody who stands up in the back with a 20-foot-long steering oar that steers the boat as the people provide the power for it. And then you have on race day, you have someone who sits up in the bow of the boat on a chair with a drum in front of them and they bang on the drum. It's really, really fun. And it's a wonderful way for people to build team building, camaraderie kind of things. This is a big, big reason why dragon boating and breast cancer survivorship is huge in the world. They're very tightly tied.
Right, because it naturally goes together, that whole
thing.
Joining together and feeling like you're part of something else that really helps with your motivation. And
exactly.
And presumably in the boats themselves when you're working, it's really about those 10 or 20 people becoming coordinating and moving as a whole.
Yes, exactly.
To really do well.
Because in Dragon Boat, there are no superstars in the paddlers. There's no superstar. And if you think as a paddler, I'm just going to strike out and be really great on my own, you're pretty much going to slow the boat down and you will never win a race. Everybody needs to be doing, hitting the water at the same exact time, doing as much as they can, the same exact pressure, the same exact everything. And then the boat will fly. My boats unloaded weigh about 500 pounds. The 20 person boats are twice or 2.5 times that weight without any people or equipment in them.
Right.
That's a big, big, huge, heavy thing to have to move on the water. And if you find the physics of it, the way the boat wants to move, it always comes down to everybody working together and being as if you were one organism. And that is the trick.
Nice. And it's, yeah, it's a nice philosophy to apply to life as well.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Cause everybody has to work together. You know, if someone comes back a little far or they're not moving forward enough, you have to adjust yourself to make sure that that happens, or gently let them know because they're a valued member of the team. I had a paddler ask me, well, which is the best bench to sit in? I said, yes, they're all the best. Everybody brings a different gift no matter which position in the boat you're in. We need all types of people. We need small people. We need big people. We need tall people. We need shorter people. I mean, everybody. There's a place for everyone in this sport.
Everybody. And you've been doing it for how long now?
10 years.
Wow.
Yep.
And this is what you do. You coach people. You spend your summers.
I do. Yes. I spend my summers coaching people. My favorite people to work with are the ones who have never seen a dragon boat before, are scared to even just walk all the way to the water's edge. They're like, well, man, I saw this in the newspaper. I'm not really sure, you know, and I come there and I'm like, hello. And I give them a big warm welcome and tell them and say, hey, so happy you're here. And you don't have any experience. You've never paddled before. Perfect. I don't have to unteach you anything. So those are my favorite ones because the barrier to entry to this sport is so low. You can really, really learn exactly what you need to learn within 30, 45 minutes of being on the water.
Really?
And you take that lesson with you no matter where you go. The basics, the fundamentals are the same, whether you've just walked in out of the parking lot or you're paddling at the world level. And I'm telling you, there are breast cancer survivors, women in their 80s and younger, who are paddling at the world level and winning medals.
Really?
For their thing. Yes.
Wow.
So you, it doesn't matter how old you are, how out of shape you are, how desperately sick you've been. This sport has something for you.
And yeah, you can become part of a winning team. Yeah, absolutely.
Huge community. So in next year in Florence, Italy, will be a huge gathering of breast cancer survivor teams. And they just walk in there. It's a huge sisterhood for them. It's the most beautiful thing.
And so yeah. you also get in doing what you do with these dragon boats to travel the world, because I know you were in the UK earlier this year, weren't you?
I was. Yep. I was traveling with the family there, and we had a good time wandering around. There's dragon boat in the UK. There's dragon boat everywhere. Where else have I been? I've been to Canada. I've been all over. Not all over, but this summer I went to race at different races here in the U.S. just within driving distance of my home. And in fact, I have my festival is done now, so that was a great success. We had 4 charity partners that we supported. A beautiful day, and then so November I'm going to Florida with a group of paddlers from Tennessee. A woman there, she runs a group called Paddlers Without Borders, and so she's like, hey, we're going here, join in. So, okay, let's go. And so then 2 of my friends who are also paddlers who travel the world who live in Canada, they're going to fly down to me, stay overnight. We'll drive to Florida together. 4 of us will stay in a hotel room and, girls, we're all in our 50s and 60s. And it's going to be like a fun slumber party, like, sorority kind of thing. We get up in early the next morning. We race all day. Hopefully we win medals. Come home, and then they're welcome to stay with me as long as they wish in my house because they're wonderful people. And this is how you build a community for yourself. This is how you do this. And you mentioned that I do coaching, but I also, so part of my training and my coaching is talking about things that are like primary foods versus secondary foods. And so those primary foods are those things that are physical activity and your career and your relationships and your connection to nature. So dragon boating gives you all those primary foods kind of thing. And it's a way to, it's just a really great way to fill your cup up that way without worrying about what's on your dinner plate.
I think that's a large part actually that people don't consider often, mm-hmm. especially when you're wanting to lose weight, that the focus is all about diet, but actually right. it's all the other things that are just as important.
Exactly.
And if you can get the things that you're looking for in food, but that's actually misplaced that direction, what you're actually looking to fill are all the other things emotionally and otherwise.
Because if something's not right in those areas, then all the broccoli in the world isn't going to help you.
No, exactly.
It's just not, you know? And so that's made it another reason why I'm continually reaching out, because my home situation was geared towards keeping me isolated, geared towards keeping me just one person's person. and I said, no, this is not good for my health. I have to be out in the community. I have to be out interacting with people and hearing different people's perspectives and seeing their different experiences. I had to do that as a human. It's just mm-hmm. a human thing. You have to do that.
That lifestyle that you chose mm-hmm. was both reactive to, but also fueled problems at home. And that's something that you're breaking away from.
Yeah, it was the big thing was that it was supposedly taking me away from the family, but really not. I had my festival for years and years and years. All I did was my own festival, which is right here in my own town. And yes, I was taking teams out on the water to help train them so they would be ready, but I never left town, right? It was only really this year or so. I would go to a training camp with my cousin in Florida. There's a beautiful training camp there every April. And you get to live like a full-time athlete for a whole week.
Nice.
Which, if that appeals to you, this is a really great opportunity. Some people are like, I don't think so. But me, I'm like, yes, get me on board. Because I, even at my advanced age, can go and feel like I'm accomplishing a great thing for myself and being part of a team and contributing and living that life that we, you know, only so few people get to do, which is be a professional athlete or a full-time athlete and that's how you live your life. To me, that was the most amazing opportunity. So I went every year for 5 straight years and met my cousin. She lives in Vermont. She would come down. We have a little mini family reunion. So again, relationships.
Yeah, all plays in.
Comes in. So, and then fueling your body properly because you're out on the water 2 times a day. And then on the Thursday of the week, you only go out once a day, but that's because you're paddling for 18 miles. Wow. So that builds a lot of muscle memory, right? So you have to fuel yourself properly. You have to know what you're about. What is your fuel of choice kind of thing? So for me, it's fat.
Yeah. So the way you eat is really enabling the lifestyle that you want to live.
Everything else.
Out of season? There is a sort of season, presumably, depending where you live. Obviously, if you're in warmer climates, presumably you can do it all year. But so what do you do outside the season, apart from extending it a bit by going mm-hmm. to Florida and things? What is your activity of choice in the off season?
So I actually play tennis year round as well. And obviously in the winter here in Georgia, I can play year round. And other places can too, but it would be indoors, but I like to be outside. So I play tennis. In fact, in a couple of weeks, I'm going with my team to the Georgia State Championships, USTA. So that will be the second year in a row we got invited to play at the state level against other teams. I'm very excited. We have a strong team and it's going to be lots of fun. So, yep, do that. And then, again, I walk a lot. I just stay active every day, try to get in the sun every day. You know, that 10 o'clock sun on my face is just the best thing. Feels so good. It just gets your mood up, everything. Sets the tone for the day for me to be outdoors and make that happen. Then, of course, in the off season from dragon boating, which also helps my tennis, I do weight training, strength work, that kind of thing, body weight things, nothing where I'm going to get, you know, I'm not 20 anymore. Although, you know, I feel like I am.
I was going to say, but you feel like it.
I do. But I have to, you know, there are certain realities about, you know, aging. And if I want to still be doing fun stuff when I'm 80, then I need to make sure I don't get a bad injury now. So the things I do are pretty fluid and gentle. The stop and start stuff on the tennis court. Yeah. Okay. But I'm getting into like old lady tennis where we lob each other a lot. But I will run for everything. Don't, you know, I tell my partners, if they lob you, don't worry. I'm back there. I'm going to run and go get that ball, and I will get it. So, but that's because, you know, I'm fueled properly. I'm not crashing on the court. You know, you want to take it to three sets? Let's do it. I'm ready. You know, and they're all like gasping. I'm like, well, good. You know, strategic advantage.
So where are you going now? What's your direction now, where you've moved forward? You were saying you worked with software and computing before, mm-hmm. but now it sounds like your work is much more around this coaching. That's your business. You have a coaching business.
Well,
now.
I started it as a hobby. I just, you know, it just kind of seemed like a natural thing to do a couple years ago when people kept asking me, hey, I noticed, you know, you used to be really big. You used to do all this stuff and now you're not. What's going on? Can you show me, tell me what you're doing? And I wanted to very, very badly, but I also didn't want to tell people the wrong thing or get in trouble with the law or, you know, have a doctor come after me saying, hey, you're practicing medicine without a license, all that stuff. I'm like, ah. So I actually went back and got a coaching certification from the IIN, the Integrative Nutrition School out of New York. And it was really a good program. It was like a year-long thing. And at the end of it, I learned a lot. And it was not just about keto. It was about everything and those primary foods that I talked about. I'm really glad I went through that experience. Although my niche is more towards people who want to work in the low carb arena. Maybe not necessarily full on keto or zero carb or anything else like that. But just, let's just get the crinkly wrappers out of our lives. Let's get those fizzy drinks, you know, let's limit those kinds of things and go back to eating real food that, yes, you're going to have to cook. Yes, you're going to have to actually shop and maybe visit the farmer's market. And we're very, very fortunate here that we still have a lot of farmland here. So I actually buy my beef from my children's former Montessori teacher. She and her husband own a cattle ranch. So again, everything's interconnected. We find people who have our same kind of philosophy and values on life, and we support them. Whatever it is you're doing, whether you're paddling or you're raising cattle or you're growing vegetables or whatever it is, you find your community and you support them and be an example. Just be an example. So that's why I got into coaching, because people were asking me to share what I was doing. So it was a slow, it's still a slow start because of what's happening in my personal life. That's taking a lot of my focus these days. And really all I ever wanted to do initially was to have it be kind of like a hobby, a service thing, right? I wasn't looking to build an empire and get, you know, super wealthy and, you know, these articles, oh, be in your bikini on the beach and you know, make all this money doing virtual coaching. That wasn't my focus. I want to work one-on-one with people who are really going through real stuff and need someone who's been down every rabbit hole and made every mistake in the book and feels their pain. Because, yeah, I was that person. I went home and ate myself another 15 pounds heavier. That was me.
You naturally end up working with people in the exercise as well. Do you mm-hmm. find they start with you in the dragon boats and you end up talking about the nutrition as well or vice versa?
So I had one of my clients, she came to me and she was very adamant. She said, I am not going to the gym. I am not working out. I am not doing any of that, thinking, you know, that I was going to argue with her. I said, oh, okay, then don't do it. She's like, what? I said, no, your body's not ready. Your brain is saying, I'm not doing this, so don't do it. let's focus on, you know, getting your nutrition under control where you're happy there. Right. So 4 weeks in to her coaching program with me, she walks through the door. Oh, I was at the gym today. And I said, good for you. Cause she was ready. Right. Yeah. So that's all about people know what they need to do. They do. They don't need someone cracking the whip over them. They just need someone to say, well, if you're not ready right now, that's not a problem because we have other low-hanging fruit we can choose from in these, you know, few weeks here. So let's focus on the stuff that you are happy to do, the stuff that you're willing to throw yourself behind and the wanting to move it. And I knew it because it happened to me. I told you this. I went and dropped my kids at school and I went up to the track and walked. And then I started running. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen right away. It was a progression. And you have to be sensitive and compassionate with yourself and others because they have to walk that path too. You know, you can't just have a person walk in and throw them the whole book. Oh, you got to be lifting and doing it. If they're not even there, they're never going to be there. And you're going to look like the bad guy because you're forcing them into something. And I never want to force anybody into anything. When you're ready, you're ready. That's why I don't advertise. I don't run around, you know, put up a billboard or get on the radio. None of that. I just tell my story. I tell
people who I come
am,
to you,
and the right people arrive.
Yeah, I think that's the for me. That's the crux about coaching and people who coach well is that they have a very strong belief that the person they're working for holds all the answers.
Oh yeah.
And it's what you're doing is helping them find and unlock the solutions that they have there inside. You're just helping facilitate that. But they're the ones who actually know their body the best once they can tune into that.
Exactly. So I live in a state where I cannot give someone a meal plan that is specific for them. I cannot tell people what they can and cannot eat. It's very strict.
Really? Yes, that's the thing about the states, isn't it? It's very different from state to state what you can actually do.
Right. And I did not want to go for my nutritionist license precisely because in order for these people to keep their licensing and not get in trouble, they actually are told they need to tell people what the government says they have to, which is the food pyramid, my plate, all these things. And we've seen around the world people who go outside that box and tell people go on low carb, Gary Fetke, Tim Noakes, all these, what was her name in Australia? Jennifer, I can't remember her last name. Elliot, is it? They've all followed the evidence. They followed what they thought was the right thing. They saw the results they were getting, but because it went against the guidelines that was set up for their licensing, they are catching all kinds of hell about it.
Yeah, which is crazy. So what kind of advice can you give when it comes to nutrition then?
So we talk about how they're feeling, what it is they're eating. And then I said, well, some people, and there's research, and I'll just send them to articles or what people have written, said, here's what other people have experienced.
Right. So you can share experiences and you can share knowledge. You just can't be specific in giving them a tailored plan.
I can't be prescriptive. But that's the beauty of it, is because, you know, 80% of us, we're all the same. We're the same genetic blueprint. We're human beings, right? But then it's our exposure to things as kids. Not only environmental, but emotional. You know, some people have trauma. Some people have fabulous childhoods. All these kinds of things. And even what your work situation is now. Do you have formaldehyde around you? Do you work in agriculture with pesticides? All these kinds of things. Those are the things that make us become N=1 experiments, right? And so you can't even really be prescriptive about it. The person has to know in their own selves. And that's where journaling and noticing things about your body and your reactions to things, and even like 3 days later kind of a thing, writing it down, getting really, really become an expert on you. And so I, as a coach, can't be an expert on 20 of my clients. They have to be their own expert. Mm-hmm. But I'm there to say, well, here's a tool you can use to notice things, or here's a way to keep track of what it is you're doing. You know, you know what it is. I teach people how to calculate their own macros. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science. And there's plenty of research out there that everybody and their brother in our world is using, right? So you just pick something, make yourself a baseline, and go from there. That's what we all did. That's what I did, but, you know, 10 years ago. I didn't have a coach. I had to figure it out on my own. So now at least someone who comes to me has me to say, well, here was my process. Here's what I did. And these are the things I learned over the years. Mm-hmm. And this is the formula. If you take it, we'll create a baseline. And now we start journaling. Now we start noticing. Now we start tracking to see how you're feeling emotionally, tired-wise, you know, how's your skin, all these kinds of things. And that becomes that person's own book of experiment and how they become an expert on themselves. So that's how I work with them, yeah.
So in a way, not being able to be prescriptive mm-hmm. is actually an advantage in what you do because yeah. it forces you to look at the whole and get your clients to look at a whole and actually mm-hmm. work out their own answers.
Yes.
Instead of if you were allowed to be really prescriptive, mm-hmm. you would potentially go down the path where you say, right, this is the plan that you follow.
And then you get dogmatic about it.
And it's not going to work for everybody. And
no.
I'm a strong believer in this journaling. I mean, people get sick of me saying on the Kick-Ass Keto Bitches page,
mm-hmm. yes.
you know, all the time I'm saying, journal it, start writing it down, mm-hmm. you know, make a note of everything. And it's not about the details necessarily of all your macros and the percentages of this and that, but just write down, you know, just it, kind of what you ate, but really know all the other things, like, you know, how was your sleep? What was your stress? What's,
exactly.
you know, what's going on with your periods? Are you having headaches? You know, mm-hmm. what, all these different things.
Yes.
And if you note them day to day, just write them down in a little notebook or put them on a, you know, there's journaling software online that you can use, anything
yep.
like that.
Anything.
And it is so useful to look back
yeah.
because you forget. You think you're going to remember everything,
no.
but you forget.
And I learned about that because when I was doing my, you know, my weight training, you want to see where you started and where you are now and how well you've improved. And you have a rotten day and you're all down on yourself about whatever, whether it's nutrition journaling or, you know, how much weight you're putting on the bar or how many miles you ran, all that. You can go back. You have something that's, you know, tactile. You flip back through the pages and say, yeah, okay, I'm just having a rotten day because look how far I came and how amazing am I? And you move on.
Yeah.
Right? Versus you just get down on yourself on a negative spiral and then you're looking for the chips and salsa.
It's a really good way to remind yourself how far you've come, isn't it? Because I think so often you're stuck in the moment and you're thinking about all the things that you haven't achieved yet, all the things, all those goals that you mm-hmm. constantly setting yourself that you haven't reached yet. But when you write some of that down and when you take some time to look back, you start seeing all the goals that you've already achieved.
Yeah,
thank
exactly.
you very much. And yes, there are goals that you've still got set in front of you, but you're going to achieve those just as you've
right.
achieved the other
and
one.
And then it becomes easier to say, to know what the next baby step needs to be.
And it's all about baby steps, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's
yes.
In the moment, you want to make those giant leaps. You just want to get there straight away,
yeah.
but that's not how you do it.
Not how it's
in
sustained.
Little tiny bits yeah. and you slip back a little bit and mm-hmm. then forwards and back
yep.
and forwards.
It's just, it has to be sustainable. It has to be something you can live with the rest of your life. No matter what it is, whether it's movement oriented or nutrition oriented or people that you allow in your life kind of thing.
People you get rid of out of your life.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And sometimes I think about acceptance as well. Sometimes when you were saying about, yes, you have to find things that are sustainable. Mm-hmm. And I know that was the case for me when I was losing weight. It was all about getting to that target weight.
And then you're now what?
Which I did, and it all went wrong, and that's when I found keto. I'd been low carb, high fat before, but much more moderate, and I came down to the more restrictive, as I thought, keto. So what I decided with the target weight and wanting to get back to the target weight, but what I realized was that I wanted to eat sustainably. This is how I want to eat for the rest of my life. And so I'm going to focus on that, and the weight will get where it gets to, whether it's the target weight, whether it's above, whether it's below, it will find its own level. And I think that's something that sometimes people have to accept, that they're not necessarily going to hit a specific number, but they are going to arrive at a number that's right for them.
Right. And they'll be there, and then it'll change as they get older. Absolutely. Or your focus for your fitness changes. So say you want to get into powerlifting. Well, sorry, girls, you're going to have to gain some weight.
Because you need to be strong. You need some weight behind you.
But it's awesome weight. It's muscle weight. It's bone weight.
And it allows you to do all these fabulous things like dragon boat races.
Yeah. So my big question to my clients is, they tell me all these things they want to do or how they want to be. And my thing to them is to take that the next step. So I say, well, you want to do this, that, and the other thing, but it's so that what? So that you can run faster on the tennis court? Great.
Yeah.
So that you can get that coveted seat on the drummer's chair on the dragon boat, because you can't be a big girl up there. You're going to dive the nose of the boat under the water. Or you want to gain 10 pounds so that you can be a stronger paddler and sit in the engine room.
Yeah.
Why?
So what is it? Yeah. What is it you want to be able to do? Yeah. So yeah, having that reason for changing your weight, changing
and that
your body
emotional
shape.
That emotional reason. Some of us, it's like, so that I'm gonna look great at my 40-year reunion. Perfect, great. If that's the emotional reason why it's driving you, and that's keeping you making wise choices in the grocery store, go for it, because that will be your anchor in your mind. You're gonna walk past that donut because it's not serving you, not because it's good or bad. I don't label food as good or bad. I just label it, is it serving your goal or not?
Yeah, and it's like you were saying before about your primary foods and the primary things you're feeding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. And it sounds like you're doing amazing work serving others, but serving yourself as well.
Yes. So someday I'm going to find a way to make this pay the rent. I may have to go back to, working in bookkeeping or something. I don't know. And that's fine.
I think there's something about the universe and how it comes back round to help you when you help others. Okay. So all these things we've learned about you, what would be your top tip to recommend to other people?
Yeah. I think keeping it simple and approaching people where they are, even if they're not doing keto. I found personally that when I look at people who are vegetarians or vegans, and their whole attitude towards, they say, this is who I am. They've really internalized it. And it helps them make those tough decisions when they're out to dinner or they're with their friends or they're doing things that everybody kind of looks down their nose and goes, oh, please, do we really have to go here? Just have the piece of bacon, And they're like, no, this is who I am. And they're very unapologetic about it. And I love that, because we can take that page out of their book as keto people and say, everybody else, please enjoy the rice and pasta and potatoes. Have a great time with that. Enjoy the heck out of it. And what I am is I'm the person who's replacing that stuff in the restaurant with some sautéed spinach.
Yeah, I love that. I love that actually that vegetarians have forged the path for us.
Yes. Yes.
It's a nice link. I like it because they have taken some stick in the past, but you're right. They do stand proud and say, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. We should do the same.
We should definitely do that, because it's having compassion for yourself. It's having compassion for what your body is able to handle from the dinner plate. So many of us say, well, my mom cooked it. I have to have it. And we don't have to do that. We have a different way to have compassion for the people in our relationships and appreciate them different ways than other than eating the food that they put in front of us.
It's a fantastic tip. So it becomes much more than this is just the way I eat. This is who I am.
It's who I am. Yeah. And it makes me a better person.
Yeah. And it obviously does. And it's obviously who you are. And I can see your passion. And I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. Thank you so much, Jessica, for joining me.
I really appreciate this opportunity, Daisy. I've followed you, what's going on, and the two keto guys. And I just love them. Yep. Absolutely adore them. And what they're about too, right? They're just, you know, so wonderful. And to surround myself with people, I may never ever meet you guys ever in person, but the fact that through technology, we can sit here and look at each other on a computer screen and have this conversation and tune into a podcast and just find ways to, like, we're in the sitting in the middle of traffic in the car, perfect opportunity to get upset with life, but you put something on. And here's my friend. I listen to them every week. This is wonderful. Yeah.
One of my favorite places to listen to podcasts actually is in the car.
Yes.
And I think that's right. It feeds back into what you were saying about community and how it is possible to find this community all around the world and to feel part of it.
And who you choose to surround yourself. You surround yourself with the right people.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be in person. It can be through the books they've written, podcasts they do, their contribution to Facebook sites, people that you meet once a year at training camp, all that. That becomes your crowd. Yeah.
Find your tribe. Well, hopefully I will get to actually meet you in person one day.
I would love that
I'm
so much.
I'm sure we will. I think we will. Great. So thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Daisy. I really appreciate your time. Okay.
Bye-bye. To find out more about Jessica and get links and information from the show, go to www.ketowomenpodcast.com. Do you want to be one of my extraordinary women? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomenpodcast.com. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to help me make more, please head over to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman, where you can make a monthly contribution and join me on this exciting adventure. You can also simply hit the support button on the website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. For those of you who are still with me at the end of the show, I thought I'd have a special segment here just for you. Each week I'm going to look for a great quote to leave you with. This week is a line from Nora Ephron. Above all, be the heroine of your life, not the victim. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.